well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking with Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio, here in just a moment. You know, Mark recently celebrating his 15th anniversary of Armed American Radio. And generally, when we talk with Mark, whatever the first topic is, we end up going far afield. So this is not going to be a single subject interview. We're going to be talking about the Supreme Court. We're going to be talking about the upcoming NRA annual meeting, the threats to gun owners in a second term of the Biden administration, and more. It's a great conversation, as always, with Mark. Take a look and a listen. Mark, how you doing, sir? It's good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Congratulations, by the way, on 15 years of Armed American Radio. That is absolutely amazing.
15 years, Cam. I can't believe it's been that long.
I know. Well, like I said, you and I were talking off air a couple of weeks ago. April 16th was the 20th anniversary of Cam and Company. So, yeah, you and I have somewhere along the line, we turned into the old dogs, Mark. I'm not sure how that happened, but
veterans. And we're not the old dog. I call it what you want. I enjoy when people come to us for advice, and I'm glad to help. You know, there's a lot of new up and comers back there are out there right now, and we can't do this without them. We need them, and it's good to see the growth in this genre of radio and this genre of podcasting and video and so forth. Because I'll tell you, man, as you well know, if it's not us out there doing it, okay, the media owns the narrative, and we can never let that happen. So I'm proud to be doing it, and I know you are too.
Absolutely, and you're right. I think it's more crucial than ever that we've got voices out there, and I am glad to see that, listen, people would not be doing this. We wouldn't see this growth if there wasn't an interest, right, if there wasn't an audience. It has become, I mean, again, you know, the media bias has been ever present. This was something that, you know, we were complaining about 15, 20 years ago, but the dominance of the media narrative, you're absolutely right about this. I don't know if you saw this NBC News piece that ran last week about the misinformation that supposedly is being targeted to Chinese Americans about their right to keep their arms. And when you look through this report, it was from the Chinese for Affirmative Action was the organization that put it together. Their misinformation is, talking about how authoritarian regimes like gun control. And gun ownership is a sign of freedom, that the police do not have any obligation to protect you as an individual. This isn't misinformation. These are either opinions or facts, but it's not misinformation. And yet NBC News just basically wrote a press release for this report. There was no pushback whatsoever. They didn't bother to reach out to any gun owner. And that's the type of, it's not just bias. It is an agenda-driven reporting, and we're seeing this, you know, day in and day out when it comes to our Second Amendment rights.
You know, I got a text message from our good friend Diana Mueller yesterday, inquiring as to whether or not she was going to run into me at the NRA convention. I've had a lot of questions on that, so I'll answer that question. I will not be going to the NRA convention. It's very difficult for me travel wise because it's only one day for me Saturday. I'm on air Fridays and Sundays and Mondays, and it makes it very difficult for the NRA. So I won't be at that, unfortunately, because I love going there to meet the consumers and meet the fans. It's always a blast, but it's logistically it's tough. But she wanted to know if I was going to be there because she's bringing Lily Tang Williams with her, the Chinese immigrant running for office in New Hampshire, who just absolutely destroyed and buried our good friend David Hogg, that moron who wasn't even in the building, by the way. Let's make that point. From Chinese immigrant standpoint, she just cut him right off at the knees. You should come visit my communist country. And she said, can you ever guarantee me that no government, that this government will never become tyrannical? He said, I could never guarantee that. Then she said, the debate about gun control is over. I'm never giving up my guns. And you need to go visit a communist country and see what they did under Mao. 20 million people were killed. Plus, you know, it pretty much stifles the conversation. Then he goes out on Twitter and becomes angry and swears up and down and cusses and says he doesn't want to take away our right to bear arms. Well, good luck with that, David Hogg. You're the last person I'm giving up my guns to.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, and it's interesting because I have a feeling that David Hogg may be a very sad man this time next week when we start talking, because the Supreme Court, as you know, Mark, on Thursday at its conference is supposed to consider granting cert to couple of cases, actually three different cases, right? So you've got the Illinois gun ban cases, gun and magazine ban cases. You've got the Maryland ban on so-called assault weapons. And then I covered this yesterday on Cam & Company, Srower versus NYC, which takes on New York City's long gun licensing laws and the good character clause, right? So if you don't provide proof of good moral character, they can deny you your license for any reason or no reason whatsoever. It's the exact same language that was struck down in Bruin because of how subjective it is. And now you've got this case going up before the Supreme Court. Now, admittedly, it's on an early sort of preliminary injunction. This case is not going to trial. But I'm curious to get your thoughts on what you think the Supreme Court will do with these cases. You know, since Bruin, they've accepted a couple of cases that the government has asked them to take, right? But every case that gun owners have brought forward has been turned away to date.
I'm glad you brought that up. I think the assault weapons case out of Maryland, as you well know, is ripe for the Supreme Court to take. It's already moved through the process. It was granted cert, vacated, remanded back. It was GVR'd. So, I mean, this case is absolutely ripe. I think Thomas is just, itching to get his hands on this one. And I've talked to Alan Gottlieb about this. I'm sure you probably have, too. He's pretty confident that they'll roll these cases together and turn it into one case, which would be nice. And then you'll see the assault weapons ban, the mag bans, all of it being taken up in one big case at the Supreme Court. And when I talked to Alan about it a week ago on my show, if they don't grant cert at this conference, it just moves to another conference. It's on the table. So I feel really comfortable that this is going to be taken. And boy, I'll tell you what, when we win this case at the Supreme Court, and I'm confident we will win it, all you've got to do is go back and look at the wording in Heller, McDonald, now Bruin. It seems very unlikely that we wouldn't prevail in that case. I can't wait to see the reaction to the court's opinion, which would likely be what, next June, if they take it in this go-around, will go on next season's docket.
Yeah.
So we'll get a result for that probably likely, you know, in a year from now. But boy, I can't wait to see the look on a Shannon Watts and a David Hogg's face when they do in fact reaffirm the right to keep and bear arms is the right to keep and bear arms, particularly when it comes to the most popular rifle in America.
Absolutely. Because, you know, and again, I mean, we're talking about, as you say, the most commonly sold rifle in America these days. But also, you know, the arguments that have been used to uphold these bans, I think are really telling. It was the Seventh Circuit that said, well, these guns aren't protected by the Second Amendment because they're like machine guns. If they acknowledge that, okay, yes, these are arms, right, that are covered by the Second Amendment, then all of a sudden it becomes the job of the state to show that there were, you know, analogous laws around 1791 or maybe 1868 that would have, you know, basically prohibited hardware. And you can't find those laws, Mark. I mean, you can in 1868, but we're talking about the Deep South. We're talking about the Black Codes. We're talking about laws that said, hey, you freed slaves, you can't own these rifles. You can't own these pistols. And when those were taken off the books, you know, a lot of the governments then wrote those laws in a racially neutral way, but applied them to one segment of the population. Those are the only bits of evidence that the government can point to. And by the way, those laws back then were flagrantly unconstitutional. So they don't have a legal leg to stand on. Instead, they've got to play these games where now it's, again, it's a machine gun. It's not a semi-automatic firearm, so it can be banned. Magazines aren't arms. We've heard that, too, even though, good luck. I've never understood that argument either, Mark. I got to say, because, you know, if magazines are not arms, then what about those firearms that don't have a detachable magazine, where the magazine is an internal? Firearm can't function without one. So they've got to be covered under the Second Amendment. But these, again, are the, you know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pen kind of questions that these judges are raising to try to avoid acknowledging that our right to keep and bear arms is real, it's fundamental, and it's being violated on a daily basis across the country.
Well, when you go back to Bruin, okay, and you talk about those analogous laws, the Supreme Court has already referred to some of those individual laws as outliers. Okay, mm-hmm. They were not law of the land. There was an outlier law that would later be repealed, whatever the case may be, or overturned. You're talking about Black Codes, et cetera. So yeah, they don't have a leg to stand on this. And I'm optimistic to a point that I'm as optimistic as I am about Biden losing this election. Okay, I'll tell you right now, it's Trump plus 320 electoral votes. I feel confident saying that, as confident as I feel saying that these bans will be overturned, because they are a legal stretch that eliminates the right to bear arms. But you're talking to a guy, Cam, that thinks machine guns, I should be able to buy a machine gun out of a vending machine, as far as I'm concerned. Okay. Don't tell me for 2 seconds that the founding fathers would have said, because honestly, to believe otherwise, you would have to believe this, and listeners and viewers, this is not a stretch, but you would have to believe that the founding fathers would have said, those guns are not protected by the Second Amendment because we don't want ourselves to use those guns against the people we fight against that are going to use those guns. You would have to be intellectually dishonest enough to believe that they would want to sell their own selves short with the tools and weapons that they needed to protect themselves from the tyrannical government that they just overthrew.
Right.
And to suggest that is dishonest and, quite frankly, makes you look stupid. So, you know, look, that whole argument goes back to that sophomoric argument about they would have never foreseen a computer and this, okay, this keypad and everything else that we know, that the Second Amendment would, you know, only applies to muskets. We hear that stupid argument from these guys all the time.
Right.
Well, the same be with my phone over here or would be with my keyboard. We should all be using quill pens and parchment, you know. Come on. We all know better than that. And I think we know what the founding fathers suggested as well. They certainly wouldn't have said to themselves, okay, well, we'll ban those guns. We certainly don't want to use them. We want to continue to fight an advancing army with our muskets. Come on. I mean, it's just literally real common sense. And that's not something you get from the left, as you well know.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, listen, you mentioned the NRA. I will not be at the NRA annual meeting either this weekend. And again, it's just, you know, difficult for me to get away from the house for basically more than 4 to 6 hours these days. You know, just have to make sure that my wife's doing okay. So I will not be in Texas. But I think it's fair to say, Mark, this is going to be the most consequential NRA annual meeting since 1977. I mean, by this time next week, I think we'll have a better idea of what the future of the NRA will be, and how long that future may last.
It better be a strong future. Okay. I'm no fan, as you know, of what's been happening with the NRA over the last few years. But I'll just be honest. That's why I haven't attended the meetings over the last few years. I was tired of what was happening and I didn't want to be seen as supportive of that at all. Now you have Jeff Knox sitting on the board. Okay. That fight that goes back with his family back to the 1970s. And now he's on the board of directors. I'd like to see the board pared down from 75 to 25 maximum. You know, that's wishful thinking on my part. Are they going to get rid of some of the old cronies? All of that's going to come out. What's the New York court eventually going to do as far as overseeing the National Rifle Association? But this country needs a strong NRA, and a strong NRA today, Cam, I think you'll agree with me, means lean and mean and staying focused on its mission. Stay focused on your two-way mission. Don't go outside the rails. Don't get it out of the guardrails. Stay in your lane and fight for the right to keep and bear arms. Start taking the lead again, but it's not going to happen overnight. They've done so much damage to themselves and their reputation. I think it's at least 4 to 5 years out before we start to see that lean, mean NRA fighting machine. I hope I'm wrong with that, but I don't know if history is going to prove me right or wrong. I will
take the optimistic view, and I think that if the changes are made, if there is that evidence of, okay, the old guard is no longer in power, and there really is a, you know, you can call it whatever you want, an insurgency, reformation, but whatever. If we get out of the annual meeting and it's not the same old folks who are saying the same old things, right? But there are some new voices who are in a position to guide the organization, you know, going forward. I don't know it's going to take 5 years. It is going to be a process, right? Because there are a lot of, first of all, there are a lot of folks who are no longer members. They just, you know, they're yearly members. They let their membership lapse. There are, you know, lifetime NRA members who are not involved in the organization because of the concerns that they've had, because of the problems that have emerged over the past few years. And I think that, you know, again, if they can show, look, we're being transparent about what's going on. Here are the, you know, 3, 4, 5 steps that we are taking immediately to right the ship. You can start to bring some of those folks back. And I think you're right. I mean, I do think it needs to be a lean, mean organization. I want to see them get back not only to the advocacy, which has never really dropped. I mean, well, it's dropped off. It's not, you know, they don't have as many lobbyists. ILA is not as big as it was a few years ago. They haven't completely abandoned that. But also, the, you know, the general operation side of things, the education, the training components, you know, all of these things that the NRA did very well, competitive shooting, building that culture of responsible gun ownership. I want to see the organization get back to that, too.
And stay there. And look, part of that process is going to be, and I don't know how to articulate this, the media has successfully beaten the NRA up. Let's face it. We can't deny that. The left has been very effective, have spent a ton of money demonizing the National Rifle Association. John Lott got attacked on Twitter the other day as a shill for the NRA because of a Wall Street Journal op-ed that had nothing to do with the NRA. Yet they get beat up by the, and this was an operative, I forget his name, from Everytown for Gun Safety, who tweeted back, look at this. This is what the, you know, here we go with the NRA. Well, the NRA had nothing to do with it, but they're very effective in those attacks. And the general public sees this and thinks NRA bad, NRA, when that's getting beaten into your head 24/7 with social media, with 24/7 news, pushing this huge anti-gun agenda. The NRA took, you know, it's not all their fault. They took a lot of body punches and they've still stood with, what do we got, 4.5 million members. I say that proudly. I've never let my membership lapse. Okay. And I'm never going to. But gosh, you know, I hope you're right. I hope it's not quite 5 years. But as I get older, I look back and think, man, 5 years ago, it's not that long. It's fly right. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong about that. I'd like to see a 2-year process at most. But a lot of that is going to depend on change of leadership, I think. And yeah. I think bringing the demographic, let's face it, the old guard NRA in the 50, 60, 70-year-old rate is aging out. We've got to start bringing some younger people in. And that's where competitive shooting becomes a huge part. If they start focusing on that, they can start bringing in that younger crowd. You look at organizations like Daniel Defense and the Double D Foundation that are out there supporting the youth shooting sports across the country. They're growing like a weed. Mm-hmm. That's what the NRA is going after, that younger demographic. Bring some of those kids in. And, you know, guys like us who have been around for a long time, you're a longtime staple with the National Rifle Association. People think Cam Edwards, they think NRA, even to this day. You're, you know, NRA News and everything else, all the great work you did when the NRA was doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Yeah. And which, listen, we could go off on a whole tangent about NRA News versus NRA TV and kind of, you know, again, getting away from that core mission. But, you know, I want to go back to something you said, because, you know, one of the biggest issues I think the NRA has had outside of all of the things that, you know, the $250,000 suits, the, you know, $1 million private jet rides, whatever. Wayne Lapierre was not visible over most of the last 5 years. Right. He wasn't on Meet the Press. He wasn't doing the Sunday shows. And, you know, at one point I mentioned this, I think, in a tweet, and somebody from NRA was like, well, you know, we're talking to the members. You know, we don't need to go on there. It's baloney. It's so biased. No, you do need to step into the arena. And Wayne used to do that. I don't know if they're going to split up the position of EVP and you're going to have a chief spokesperson. That's going to be two different positions. But the NRA does need to be more aggressive about getting back into the arena, not only defending the organization, but also, again, defending the right to keep and bear arms and defending gun owners. Right.
And because, like you said, because if the media, as we're talking about, the media successfully pounds them and beats them into the ground and they're not responding, they lose. It's that simple.
Yeah.
That's the only narrative that the people and the viewers and the readers see and hear about is what's coming from the other side. And, you know, that's why shows like this are so important. It's why Gun Talk with Tom Gresham, getting ready to celebrate 30 years next year, as you well know, remarkable run, incredible run. 15 years of Armed American Radio beginning 69. These shows are very important for that very reason. The smaller podcasts that are coming up now, the YouTube channels where some of these younger guys are moving, that's incredibly important. And the NRA needs to take some of that as an example and bring some of these people into the mix. We don't need our own side eating ourselves anymore. We're very good at that.
Yeah,
we're good at cannibalizing ourselves, and we need to stop doing that. And, you know, look, Second Amendment Foundation has filled the void and the vacuum, as you well know, 59 court cases going on right now. winning victory after victory. How many of the Supreme Court's cases that are up for conference in 2 days are SAF cases? Five, I believe.
I think you're right. Yeah.
I mean, this is remarkable work. Remarkable work. And that's what the NRA needs to stay focused on. Stop taking credit for everybody else's work and get in there and start fighting on behalf of gun owners again. And I think they will. I think they will. I don't think the NRA is going anywhere. 4.5 million, 5 million members. Look, you know, they're going to, you know how many people they're going to put in Dallas this weekend? 80, 90,000 people easily. Every town for couldn't fill the parking lot. Okay. So it's a real organization with real people that are there. It's real. It's not an AstroTurf deal. It's real grassroots. It's going to be on full display in Dallas. And the other side needs to know that. And they do. They won't. Well, they'll muster up. Most I've ever seen, Cam, is about 100 maximum that show on outside. I've never seen more than that.
There was I was in Houston right after Uvalde. And that was a little bit of a different animal, right? Because it was so close to Uvalde. And so, you know, David Hogg came down and every town, you know, I don't know if they rented out the park or they got a permit, you know, to protest in the park across the street. And they had music, you know, they brought people in, right? It wasn't just the, as you say, the, you know, a couple of dozen protesters with their signs. Like, they made it an event. And they probably had, I don't know, 1,000 people, maybe 1,500 people. Again, compared to the 80 or so thousand people inside the convention center, right? So you're right. When it is, you know, if we're talking pure numbers, the energy in the grassroots has always been on the side of the Second Amendment. That's where the gun control movement has always struggled. And they've done their best with AstroTurf, right? I mean, you know, Giffords has their group of, you know, gun-hating gun owners. And, you know, you've got, they'll try to do this. Every now and then, they'll put forward this attempt to show that they are a real grassroots organization. And they always end up face planting because the energy is on our side. So I think you're right. I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some folks out there in Dallas holding their signs and, oh, you're terrible people. But
you know, we met David Hogg was there. Oh boy. Oh no. David Hogg was there. let's not, you know, there's some of the old Sun Tzu art of war that comes into play in my mind in some of this stuff that you can never, ever, ever refuse to accept the situation. You have to look at it objectively and think, well, you know, could Biden win the election? Yeah, he could win the election. You can't refuse to believe. If you refuse to believe that, you become complacent, you wind up losing the battle. The general knows the most about every enemy he's ever fought, wins every battle and every war ever fought. These things are truisms that have been proven out by history. One thing that the other side is very, very good at is mustering that anger. For example, a march on Washington, D.C. You know, they bring 500,000 people, whatever they brought. Okay. I remember being at the first pro-gun rally as a speaker in 2010. We had 2,000 people there. Okay. We're not very good at bringing those people out. Hey, you hear this stuff. Well, that's because our side isn't working. You know, the Democrats aren't working. This all. Look, they're very, very good at bringing that other side out. Gottlieb will remind me and you every time he's a guest on a radio program that they are very good at what they do. We wish they had their billions of dollars. That makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. In the courtrooms, we win 9 out of 10 times. Why? Well, just like you said about the National Rifle Association, because we're right. We have the Constitution. We're right. And when you're right, but again, that causes complacency as well, too. How many gun owners do you know that say, ah, that bill's not going to bother me. I have all of my guns, or I can still go down and buy a gun today. Okay. You're not looking at the long game that the other side is involved in. This is multi-generational.
Yep.
Is what they're back to the conversation we had about machine guns and semi-automatic rifles. Their ultimate goal is to, through what, and a great example of this is what the ATF is doing right now, redefining the language. This is now a gun. Semi-automatic doesn't mean it's bump stocks are now machine guns. Well, the ultimate goal, and I think we've discussed it before, is to redefine semi-automatic. Why? Because guess what? I can bump fire a rifle or a pistol without a bump stock. In fact, I can do it by accident, which I've done. All right. You can make that happen. You can use a belt loop. You can use a brother. There's all kinds of ways to do that. So what do they do? Well, we've banned bump stocks. That wasn't enough. Maybe we need to redefine the term semi-automatic.
You're right. You and I have been talking about this for the past couple of years, and they're getting more aggressive about this, right? So we saw the city of Chicago sue Glock Saying, well, you know, you got this design flaw you refuse to fix, and it's, you know, you can put the switches in and turn into machine guns. So they're trying to stop Chicago residents from being able to buy Glocks. You had, what, 12 or 13 Democrat attorneys general send a letter to Glock basically saying, hold on to your papers because you're about to get sued, right? And we know that, again, for the past couple of years, gun control groups have been pushing the Biden administration behind the scenes to have the ATF reclassify some or all semi-automatic firearms as if they are machine guns, supposedly because they're readily converted, right? So this is, I don't think they're even trying to hide it anymore. You know, it used to be you'd see this argument made in court filings and, you know, civil lawsuits. Maybe you'd see, you know, like Guns Down, Igor Volsky would make a comment, but none of the major groups were really going down that road. Now they are. Now it's Giffords. Now it's Everytown. Now it's Brady, who are starting to, you know, make the case that semi-autos should be treated as if they're machine guns. And I think it is going to become, I mean, again, you talk about what would happen under a second Biden term. I think that's the first ATF rule that'll be promulgated if Biden wins re-election. You'd see a reclassification.
ATF right now is what a mess. And I got to hand this off to Lee Williams, the gun writer, who I know you've read, and you guys at Bearing Arms are doing amazing work. Stay on top of the ATF. This agency is so bad right now that I question individual ATF agents. Okay. You're working for a weaponized agency. You know it's a weaponized agency. Do I need to look any further than what happened to Malinowski up in Arkansas? They murdered the man. And most people think they were going to arrest him. It wasn't an arrest warrant. It was a search warrant they were executing. They killed this man. They murdered this man. ATF is now investigating itself. It appears that the Arkansas State Police have backed off. The governor, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, has said nothing. This is someone I would have expected to have said something. Her father on his own television show. Okay, that's great. He's no longer the governor. Where's your daughter? Talking about what they did to this man while executing the search. We've got the agent putting tape over a camera. Now we know that none of the agents had body cams on.
Right.
What are you intentionally trying to hide? We know it's a weaponized agency. And if you're an individual ATF agent that happens to be watching this, you're no friend of ours because you know you're working for a weaponized agency. There are, Cam, how many police forces are there that are screaming for good, decent, hardworking law enforcement agencies across the country now that are looking for officers? Yeah. Leave that agency and go to work for a police department that's going to give you a bonus and treat you the way you need to be treated. Instead, you're coming after us. They're killing people and they're getting away with it. Rogue agency. Golly, how much time do we have to go after that?
not nearly enough. We're going to have to, we'll save that for the next conversation.
Yeah, I bring that up simply because you mentioned a second Biden term. Imagine what the ATF do at a free run with what we're seeing them do now and redefining all of these terms. They're redefining these terms in the face of the courts, yet the Fifth Circuit. I mean, I've lost count of how many times the ATF has been shot down, yet they continue to do it. So very dangerous, ladies and gentlemen. Pay very careful attention to what's happening at the Biden ATF.
Absolutely. Mark Walters, one way you can pay attention is to listen to Armed American Radio. Not every day, but 6 days a week, you can listen to Armed America Radio. I don't even want to know what your Saturdays are like, Mark, where you have to cram in a week's worth of everything you can't get done in that one day when you're not on the air. But if folks want to tune in to Daily Defense, if they want to tune in to the Big Sunday Monster Cast, what's the best way to do so?
ArmedAmericanRadio.org. You can find out where to listen. You can watch the show live from the studio here. You can listen to it by clicking listen live or watch live right there. Or you can tune in to a radio station near you. We're on hundreds of stations every weekend.
Awesome. Mark, as always, man, appreciate you joining me on the program. It's always good catching up, and I hope we get a chance to do this again soon.
I'll let you be good. Thanks, Cam. Appreciate you having me.
My thanks, as always, to Mark for joining us on the program. Looking forward to talking to him again very soon. And before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for just a second. At the very heart of our democracy lies a principle that we hold sacred, free speech. It's the cornerstone that supports every freedom we cherish. Yet in today's digital age, discussions about our wealth, our rights, and our future are being silenced or overshadowed in mainstream narratives, leaving many feeling voiceless in conversations that are crucial to our financial independence and security. This is where Wealth Protection Research steps in, armed with a mission that's never been more critical. Wealth Protection Research is not a financial advisory firm. They're defenders of free speech, committed to giving a voice to the silenced. Wealth Protection Research tirelessly seeks out financial experts. These are the voices that challenge prevailing narratives, especially as we navigate the uncertainties of the 2024 election. Wealth Protection Research has created a 2024 Election Wealth Protection Report. This free report highlights the three best ideas for protecting and growing your money headed into the 2024 election. It contains ideas the mainstream media won't touch, and listeners can get it absolutely free. Just text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. If you believe in the sanctity of free speech and the importance of financial freedom, then act now. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy of this 2024 Election Protection Report. It's time to widen the scope of what we're told, to hear the ideas the establishment doesn't think you can handle, and to take control of our financial destinies. Text IDEAS to 76626 to claim your free copy. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, Good Deed of the Day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Rochester, New York. Now, I wrote a couple of weeks ago, maybe it's been more like a month ago, about the number of postal workers who are being robbed at gunpoint in many cases. Their keys are being stolen, and then the crooks are using their master keys to break into post office boxes, into the, you know, the big mail collection, the big blue boxes, to steal mail. This is a very serious crime. It's a federal offense. And yet, in Rochester, New York, a former mail carrier who stole mail dozens of times, according to authorities, walked away with probation. Yeah. How about this? 40-year-old Marlene Cruz of Rochester pleaded guilty back in January to theft of mail matter by an officer or employee, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of New York. Investigators say Cruz, who worked for the U.S. Postal Service as a full-time mail carrier, quote, routinely opened envelopes and parcels between January of 2022 and November of 2023. So for almost 2 years, she was doing this. Prosecutors said that Cruz removed items from envelopes and packages, including ticket stubs, documents, cash, lottery tickets, and gift cards on, quote, dozens of occasions. Back in November of last year, investigators executed a search warrant. They recovered a gift card from a personal duffel bag and then arrested her. And again, she is getting off with probation. 2 years of probation. That's it. So, yeah, the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of New York, you know, blasting out this press release, talking about her arrest, and, oh, we're getting tough. No, you're not. No, you're not. You gave her a slap on the wrist. This is a crime that is punishable by years in prison, and yet this mail carrier who stole items belonging to other people, they were waiting by the mailbox, waiting for that package to show up. And instead, Marlene Cruz had taken it. And the DOJ offered her a plea deal. They could have taken this case to trial. They had plenty of evidence. But instead, they gave her a way out. And of course she took it. She'd be crazy not to. So Marlene Cruz, not working for the post office anymore. But she's still out there on the street when she should have been behind bars. Today's Armed Citizen story from St. Louis, Missouri, where a home intruder was shot and ultimately arrested in St. Louis County after a break-in early this morning. Lieutenant Craig Higginbotham with the St. Louis County Police Department says a man entered a home on Empress Drive early Tuesday morning. There was a couple inside the home at the time. Higginbotham said that one of the residents fired a shot, which struck the man in the side. The intruder then ran off, was eventually found in a wooded area about a half mile away by a police canine. He was taken to the hospital at last report in critical condition. Residents of the home taken to the local police station to speak with officers. One neighbor who has lived in the area for more than 20 years told Channel 5 in St. Louis that home and car break-ins are a big problem in the area. One of the officers on the scene told the TV station that it is a persistent issue. But in this case, the intruder got more than he was bargained for, and the couple, safe, unharmed, and unlikely to be facing charges since they were acting in self-defense inside their own home. We'll keep our eyes open for any updates and bring them to you as they become available. In fact, we have an update for you on a good deed of the day from last week. You might remember it was in Cleveland, Ohio. This man who was driving by a house, saw the smoke, got out, talked to the woman who lived inside, who had a baby, and she said, I have another baby inside the house. And so he went in, ultimately ended up crawling on his hands and knees, and was searching around, couldn't find her, ran out and said, where is she? And the mom said, okay, well, this is where she was before. So he went back into the house, and first responders still weren't there. And again, in the darkness, he's struggling to find, but he grabbed a leg, he said, and just yanked, pulled the baby outside to safety. And the fire department crews that were on the scene described this as an act of heroism and bravery. Well, I am pleased to report that that good Samaritan has been reunited with the 11-month-old who he saved. This is an absolutely incredible story. And I am so pleased that this family was able to reconnect with their hero. The individual in question, a guy by the name of John Stickovich, and when he was able to reunite with the family this week, and see, there he is holding that little 11-year-old girl or 11-month-old girl, Opal. He said he already feels connected to a family that he didn't even know before this week. Mom, who was Samantha James is her name, said that, you know, a couple of minutes after he ran into the house the second time, he came out holding my baby that I thought I was never going to see again. In those moments, I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to have just one twin? Well, John Stickovich didn't give up. He kept searching. Anthony Luke, chief of the Cleveland Division of Fire, says that represents the core of what Cleveland's all about, sacrificing for each other, unselfish sacrifice. It is just totally amazing. It is totally amazing. And John Stickovich sounds like an amazing man. Opal had some burns on her head and her cheek, suffered some smoke inhalation, but she is expected to be okay. Her twin sister, Lotus, and mom, Samantha, also inhaled smoke, but they are going to be okay as well. Samantha James said, I'm so grateful for John. He's our guardian angel for sure, and for the firefighters. Meanwhile, for John Stickovich, he says the baby's safe and gets to hopefully have a full, happy life. And the family didn't have insurance. They did lose all of their belongings, but the family itself is still intact. Thanks again to the quick thinking and the bravery of John Stickovich. In the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save a little girl in need. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program. As always, I'm looking forward to being back with you again tomorrow. Don't forget, Wednesdays, that's where we do our VIP Gold live chat with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey as well. If you are a VIP or VIP Gold member, well, if you're a VIP Gold member anyway, you can be a part of that. And if you want to become a VIP Gold member, all you have to do, go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You'll get exclusive content, an ad-free experience, the ability to comment on our stories. But you'll also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I thank you very much for that support. As we were talking about with Mark, big tech censorship, the media bias, it is everywhere these days. And it has become harder and harder for us to get the truth out. But when you become a VIP or VIP Gold member, you are taking a big step forward into making sure that the truth is known. All right, we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.